Thursday. All right. I feel somewhat guilty because I... hey, Tom, I was just saying I feel guilty. I'm bugging out of here at 10:30.
Don't feel guilty because you're bugging back in here for tomorrow morning, and so right, that is more.
So I'm catching a flight out of San Francisco tonight at 10:30, back in at 12:30. Blah, 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 blah.
I'm personally impressed.
This Friday is a big day.
It is, indeed. You mean my movie review, I'm sure. Yeah,
I do feel bad every time I have to leave, but G-Scott's coming in to help handle all of it. So that is just letting everybody know guilt that I feel. And here comes Hannah Scott. All right, Hannah. About 2 weeks ago, you had the story that Regan Dunn from King County Council had said, hey, you know what? Let's look into this program of reuniting homeless with families in other states or cities.
Yes, and at the time, his proposal, the legislation he put down at the King County Council, called for at least $1 million for the program, for a pilot program that would do just that, have prepaid bus tickets to reunite homeless people with their families anywhere in the continental United States. So yesterday he had a first chance to really kind of flesh that idea out in front of the regional policy committee. So that's King County Council members as well as city leaders from all the other cities in King County. So he had some changes because between now and a couple of weeks ago, he's been talking to other elected officials about the best way to get this passed. So after hearing from them, he made a change. Instead of $1 million, now it's a minimum of just $250,000. He does hope that goes up. But again, it's for a pilot, and he's hoping that by the time they go through budget, maybe that can go up. It also would now include train tickets because, you know, all ground transportation is the idea there. It might be better for some people. And a stipend for meals for the time that they're traveling wherever it is that the homeless person decides to go. So, and they would also have to be able to prove that they do have family in whatever city it is they're choosing that is willing and able to support them. So it's not like just shipping them off to be on somebody else's street. Several of the leaders at this meeting had concerns. This is a council member from Redmond.
How do you implement a program like this and what kind of thoughtfulness it takes to help people find their way back to their families? Sometimes people who are experiencing homelessness are really struggling with a lot of different issues, and that reunification takes a little more effort than just a bus ticket.
So, and he acknowledged that, you know, some people have burned that bridge, right, with their family members, and how do you get those people back? And he said he wants to start this with a particular group of people.
I think the first line of customers that we're addressing are the ones that haven't totally burned their relationships, that may have found themselves here for one reason or another. And that's why 9% of our one-night count shows that family reunification would help. It's that audience that we're targeting.
The other thing that was brought up from Seattle City Councilmember Deborah War is what that this proposal would require the person to be sober completely. No booze, no drugs, no anything in their system on the day that they're traveling. And she was curious how that would be enforced. Regan Dunn said, you know, we could look at, you know, urine tests or breathalyzer type things, and that would require consent. So that's something that will have to be worked out. County Councilmember Rod Dombowski, though, really, he felt Dunn was sincere about this proposal as being a compassionate effort, not anything about just, you know, kicking people out of the city. But he wanted to be sure that he issued this warning.
I want to say that if we were to go forward with this program, that I think it is important that we consider the history of powerful people in society moving out undesirables. Okay? From Native Americans to Japanese Americans and including poor folks.
So he wanted somehow in this legislation, should it go through, that it kind of puts in there that that's not the intent, something to that degree. In the end, Dunn just pointed out to success in other cities that he says this is having, specifically in San Francisco.
Right. The program helps between 600 and 800 people every year, or roughly 4% of their annualized homeless population. In contrast, King County, which has a small program already, served about 53 families in 2018. While San Francisco spent $1.2 million last year, King County spent a mere $37,000 last year.
So the idea is to build up what King County is already doing. The San Francisco program is reporting a 56% success rate. About one in every eight people that uses that program ends up back on the streets, which they say is somewhat successful. Got a brighter reception than I expected it would, actually, yesterday's meeting. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Seattle already does a version of this too, and the thing is there's nothing to prevent people from coming back, and so that I'm wondering, San Francisco is seen as like a success, I guess, one in eight.
That's not a great number, but yeah.
You know, it's something. The question is this really just a temporary lull, because it seems to me we've been, I mean, cities have been doing this a lot, have been flying people elsewhere, and then they end up drifting. They may not be Seattle's problem. If we drift them far, if we send them to family in Philadelphia, they might not make it out to Seattle as quickly, but they may end up, you
on
know,
someone else's streets.
In Baltimore or something. So, I mean, I don't know what the long-term effect of this is. I'm also wondering, why did he cut it by a quarter? Why did it, I mean, by three quarters? It went from $1 million to $250,000. Is that because there was hesitation on the board's
program? Yeah, it's start small, Tom, and then you
no, but I mean, but his proposal for the pilot project was
a million because he wants to start that large. But there was some of the behind the scenes discussions he'd been having with other.
It's a little, little shaky and so
start low. In fact, the language in the bill says a minimum of $250,000, and I forget which city it was from, but one of the leaders said, "Can we remove that word minimum and just make it 250?" Period. And so there's concerns about the money. That'll be worked out in the end at the King County Council budget process here in the couple of months coming up ahead. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're both, it's a pilot program, and he wants to try something that we haven't tried at a larger scale. Yeah. Seattle's is, I believe, the rapid rehousing thing where they kind of mediate with family members and help them get back where they need to go.
So a handful of Portland Seattle nonprofits.
How many did we send away last year? Portland sent 383 people, voluntarily got on the bus, voluntarily got on the bus and
yeah, it's
away.
All voluntary. This
voluntary,
program.
Right. I don't think the Native Americans voluntarily left.
Nor did the Japanese.
I don't remember the Japanese didn't voluntarily leave. That's a distinction that needs to be brought up with that council member. So of the 383 that left Portland, 29 went to Las Vegas. We were lucky to receive 17 of them, and 12 went to Phoenix. 58% of those who could not be reached 3 months after remaining housed, but most were unreachable. That's Portland's numbers. So
it's, and I think the idea is that it's getting more people back into permanent support, stable housing than not doing anything. And what we're doing here right now isn't doing getting people into housing fast enough. So it's another option. It's not a replacement for anything. It's a scale up of the little bit Seattle and King County are already
doing. But does it bother you, Tom, your big liberal heart and compassion? Does it feel like we're shipping people out?
Well, sure. If this works, it's a little pie in the sky. In fact, it's funny that you're not taking this attitude that, oh, well, they'll just be, sort of welcomed in the bosom of their family when they're already their lives are on the skids in a lot of ways. It seems a little idealistic. In fact, I think there have been reports that it hasn't worked as well. But when you find somebody, can you find a loving family member who will be willing to take them in? And how long will that loving family member realize, oh, that's why I couldn't stand Uncle Harry or, Aunt Jane or something? Just because it's like, yes, it would be ideal if suddenly everyone could be embraced by their own family. Now, by the same token, and I'm sure we've been on the receiving end, if you just hear from Portland, this people will be shipped to Seattle as well.
Right.
But still, ideally, if this works, I don't know how much skepticism there is.
Well, and I want to point out really quickly that one of the reasons he had this idea was the one night count from last year in King County. And, they surveyed the homeless people they interact with on that count night. And 9% of them said, yes, absolutely, we would love to be reunited with family. We're just stuck here because we got here however
it
is.
You know
how
John would be skeptical of any other thing we get in the homeless camp?
But that number works. Yeah. These are your numbers from San Francisco. They broke it down. They show it to you. Yeah. So of the people, the city says it's helped 1,700 people overcome homelessness every year. About half of them exit and are attributed to the Homeward Bound program. So the 1,700, half of them go away and go somewhere else. So the city has offered them an opportunity. They have taken it, and they've maybe gone to somewhere and got additional help or support.
Yes.
I remember one time talking to a homeless advocate that said the thing that stops you, first that lie that we're all just one paycheck away from homelessness. He goes, the reason that is not true is because each one of us that have somewhat of a healthy relationship can count on a family member or friend to help us through difficult times. He goes, and you have layers of people you could go through. First, your mom and dad, and then your brother, sister. Like, is the problem is you're descending down, right? And then you're on a friend's
couch. I don't think that's true for everyone.
It is not true for everybody. I'm not. But he said most of us.
Yeah.
So when you say most of us are one paycheck away, that's not true.
Okay.
You're just trying to make the person relate to the homeless better by lying to them. But it is. You have a relationship that you can fall back upon, and because of that. So this is an example of maybe they have somebody that can take care of them, but certainly the programs that we have in place right now costing us $100 million.
That's just Seattle.
That's just Seattle alone, yeah.
Yeah, and also, you know, we're working on that regional, the proposal for the regional approach. That's going to be, you know, a year in planning and set. It's going to be at least 18 months, I think, before anything's up and totally running there.
Right.
So this is something we could do quick, is his point, with, you know, just a little bit of money. Let's give it a try.
Go
Why
Reagan
not?
Done.
There you go.
Go Reagan done. Named after Ronald Reagan, by the way.
Yes. He didn't know Jennifer's name when she met him. I remember that story. It was really kind of sad. Jennifer Dunn, you know.
We're not talking about that. Reagan Dunn. Go Reagan Dunn. Reagan Dunn, 2020. Or is he running again? I don't even know.
Oh, I would expect so.
Well, he lost. Did he run as state treasurer? I mean, he lost attorney general. That's, he lost the race.
He was brave.
Brave.
If he was a liberal, you'd love him.
Exactly.
Right. But you know,
not
you
personally,
hate him as a,
politically.
Yeah. This is a complicated story, and there are so many loose ends to it. We have to just assume that Dory Monson is doing this to try to help his ratings, because we are number one. And just, you know, pull the curtain back on this, right, Tom?
That's all right.
We have to assume Dory is doing everything he possibly can to try to crawl, claw, and spray paint his way back up to number one.
The initial question was this a political stunt or was this for real? It wasn't a political stunt. It was a rating stunt.
That's the Tom Curley take. That's Tom's take, Dory, if you're listening. Here's what happened. The story is so, there's so many coincidences, right? So many, get the coincidence bell for me. Would you there, Jacob? I have it under either B for bell or C for coincidence. Here we go. So here's the first one. Somebody gets an RV that's not, it's a trailer. And they drive it up to a spot in West Seattle and unhook it in front of a city council member's house. Just happened to sit there.
Yeah.
Coincidence number one.
Mere days after that very idea was promulgated by a failed city council candidate on one Dory Monson show.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It takes a long for the bell.
I put it too far away from me. I have to walk over there.
I'm not really good at musical instruments. Okay. The said trailer is filled with garbage. Just so happens to be filled with garbage. So it is. Just happens to be in front of her house. Mm-hmm. Just happens to be filled with garbage. Just happens to be left there, and someone just happens to take a picture of it being unhooked at 9 o'clock at night in front of said council member's house.
Said trailer was subsequently graffitied.
Yeah, but that's go ahead. Are we open for a bell on this? Go ahead.
Someone came up to this trailer and spray painted Dory for Gov. On the trailer.
Tom, get a bell for that one? What are you doing over there? What are you, Snapchatting somebody? You got a girlfriend?
Yeah.
All right. I got to rely on Andrew to be the only one here without a girlfriend. You all right in there?
Not anymore.
All right.
Okay.
So that leads us all the way up to the Seattle Times article.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So Seattle Times talks to the woman who now owns the trailer. Apparently, somebody bought it for a buck on Craigslist or whatever, right?
I think she did.
She buys it.
She or her godfather and her boyfriend and her bought it on Facebook for a dollar.
All right. And then who hauled it over there? Do we know who hauled it and dropped it off there?
Well, I think, according to the Seattle Times, I think, you know, that threesome, the godfather, the boyfriend, and the Briar Rose Williams apparently did.
Okay.
And the reason it was there accidentally in front of a council member's house was that there's a mother involved of these, one of these three, or a wife or something.
A grandmother.
A grandmother who lives a couple blocks away.
Bell!
Go ahead.
What is wrong with the bell? We asked for the coincidence bell. All right, you know what? Let's just throw it over to Cairo 7. Let them try to straighten it all out. Hang on.
It was a hilarious coincidence.
It's not every day you find an RV parked right in front of Seattle Councilmember Lisa Herbold's house.
We didn't know. We had no idea that this was the councilperson's house.
He understands why people think his RV is a political statement, especially since a former city council candidate just threatened to tow RVs to council members' homes.
To be honest with you, when I first heard about it, I laughed.
Our news partners at Cairo Radio shot video of someone proudly spray painting Robert's camper, thinking it was dumped here on purpose. And Seattle police say his daughter checked on the camper today, and she was almost attacked with a knife.
And he was holding it and saying, I'm going to cut the baby out inside of you. And I'm homeless and pregnant, but at the same time, like, I'm trying to get it together.
The family says they just bought this RV.
We went and got it licensed specifically because we wanted to play by the rules.
They were in the process of cleaning it while figuring out where to park it permanently and just thought this was a safe spot.
I mean, this is funny, but the knife thing, that's not funny.
Does that clear up anything? Huh?
No, I mean, at least we've heard from the people that own it. So it sounds like they, again, according to what we know now, mm-hmm. and I understand, not to boost his ratings or anything, but we'll have further developments.
We can't do that type of heavy lifting.
On the Dory Monson show. Well, they'll be the next chapter or something.
Want to hear what Lisa Herbold says?
If it was intended to be a political stunt to make a comment about council members who don't have the same experiences as other people do in their neighborhoods with RVs occupying their neighborhoods, that's not the case. I've experienced that, and it's not shocking.
Okay.
All right. That's the right attitude. Right now, it doesn't look like it's a political stunt.
Okay. By the way, for those of you outraged by the fact that the guy had spray painted on it, Dory for Gov, Dory, from what I have heard, is going to have the thing cleaned and detailed, and it's going to get all that stuff off there, right? Okay. All right. Anything else you want to say about it? Other than the fact, Dory has got it today. Nicole and Dory have been working this story since the thing all started breaking yesterday. They say they have additional details and facts that are not necessarily being reported by you and I and the Seattle Times.
That's right.
You and me. Sorry, you and me.
So stay tuned.
Yes.
To Dory?
The Dory Show.
Okay, see,
when you are so high up.
Capacity for generosity from the Tom and Curley Show, we are encouraging people to watch.
Throw it out. What
to
else?
Listen.
What do you like? You want a couple extra
second
ratings?
Highest rated show on Cairo.
Wait, but you have to understand something. When he's back on top next period or whatever it is, you're going to be like,
as if he doesn't bury us.
Oh, we got a lot of the news to get to that doesn't involve Dory. Quebec is a couple of parents in Quebec are suing because they say you intentionally made this thing and it is addictive, just like tobacco is. Right back. Have we ever been a can't miss clip?
Can't imagine how.
Maybe that time you fell off that stage.
By the way, somebody has video of that.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
I would love to see that.
All right, I'll get that for you. But right now, I got to remind everybody, Keel Mortgage is the place to go with your mortgage. If you have any sort of concerns and you think that maybe, you know what, I could refinance my house, or you would want to be able to get yourself a new mortgage altogether on a new property, here's the beauty part of Keel Mortgage. The people that work there, I don't know how Laura finds these people. I guess they find Laura. They know about Laura, and they know about Laura Keel. She's been in the business for a long time. They know about her integrity, her passion, her love for just life in general. She is, Tom, again, you ever met her?
No, I've never have.
Last time she's in the building doing a commercial, she's got to come in. You will just absolutely adore her. There's just something about her as a person. It's Keel Mortgage. You'll love working with her and the rest of the team. 1-888-778-KIEL. All right. Sleepovers have parents worried about midnight gadget use. I mean, good Lordy. This is from the Wall Street Journal saying if you let your kid go over and have a sleepover at somebody else's house and say there's three or four kids or maybe just two kids, the fact that mom and dad that are in the house, I'm assuming a parent is still in the home, right?
Yes.
All right.
But, John,
you're not being raised by wolves, right?
No.
Wolves without opposing thumbs that don't have gadgets.
What this article is focused on, I am surprised because you are a hawk when it comes
to electronic
gadgets.
I hate these devices.
And anything else. This is about specifically sleepovers. Yes, I think most parents feel like they have a handle or should have a handle on their own their own kids access.
Yes.
They can turn off the Wi-Fi if you have the, you know, the, mm-hmm. the right kind of accounts and all of that at home. But when they go on slope on sleepovers, mm-hmm. the dangerous thing now is that these kids have access to all sorts of things that might be forbidden in your home, mm-hmm. or maybe because it's a group setting, it might encourage them to commit bad behavior that they might regret in the morning. And yes. they mentioned that there's this kind of peer pressure. If you have a gaggle of, you know, 13 or 14-year-olds mm-hmm. over for
they're
a night.
They're not a gaggle. That's a murder. No, go ahead.
I didn't realize they were crows. But yes. still, yes. the idea here is that they might start taking pictures of themselves. And they say, apparently this is often done. They take pictures of themselves and then post it. And then they watch to see who has more likes, literally overnight, this okay. kind of stuff.
Right.
And it's that kind of, that you know, hothouse slumber party mentality that gets people in trouble. It also exposes some kids who have just stricter parents. They might have access to pornographic images that they weren't aware of. They even talk about a 6-year-old who was invited for an overnight party, and they were playing video games that were for mature audiences.
Okay. I mean,
and
this is so simple to fix. Well, obviously, the Wall Street Journal had some space in their paper.
Okay.
The parents involved in it. Remember a couple of years ago, the big thing was, if you're a parent, you should call the other parent and say, do you have a gun in the house?
Right? Yes.
Because your kid's going over there to safeguard. Okay, is the gun, yes. blah, blah, is it in a cabinet, or how do you lock it up? Same thing. I'm sending my kid over. By the way, I don't want my kid to be exposed to cell phone stuff. I'm not sending. He has a cell phone collected from him. So the parents would then talk to the other parents
yes.
and say, listen, here's the deal. Can you ask, can you guarantee me that not one kid will have a cell phone after the time of 9 o'clock?
No.
If you can't guarantee it, then my kid's not going.
Okay. And that's part of the problem. That's what they say, is that kids then get ostracized because they're not allowed to go to these kinds of parties where more parents of kids are
bad.
Liberal.
Okay, too that's fine. Bad.
That's fine, John. But it just says, and kids are mortified. And oh, yeah, you've got the parent that calls and it continues to ostracize. Because I don't know why. I'm not representing the Wall Street Journal. And I think you are dismissive, and yet you are.
No, I am angered that other parents don't. I remember one time I was at the parent-teacher meeting, and there was a dad there. And he said, and it was like sixth graders or something. I didn't know who he was.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was at Smith School or whatever. And he says, hey, just quick survey before we start this thing. How many people have already given their kids cell phones?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, 20, 30% had, 40% had, maybe even higher. He turned to us. He goes, have you guys done it? I said, no, not yet. He goes, the rest of you, please hold the line on this.
Yeah.
Please hold the line, because it is so unfair to give a little kid a phone and to open up the sewer pipe of what's on the internet. Let's hold the line. The rest of you have done it. He took a little speech on this thing.
Yes.
But if it takes a village to raise a kid,
yes.
as Hillary talks about, it's uh-huh. everybody agreeing. This is what used to happen in the world. Everybody would agree. This is the way we raise our kids. This is how we do it. So I just assume there will be no cell phones. The fact that the parent that's actually parenting is ostracized, and the kid is ostracized because the parent is parenting. That is a sad statement, and I don't want to sleep at that person's house.
I think that's fine, John, but not all of us have such perfect children as yours.
No. My kids are not far from perfect.
I know.
I genetically entrap them.
So what's wrong with your parenting?
No.
You have drawn a strict line, and they still abuse the phone.
Because now they are teenagers.
Well, most slumber parties, I would guess, are probably, you know, young teenagers.
I don't know. How about the Quebec parents that are going to sue? They said that the people that made Fortnite, you intentionally made this thing to be as addictive as possible. Here is Global News Canada.
It's one of the most popular video games in the world. And some argue Fortnite is also one of the most addictive.
People are not aware. And parents, they weren't made aware. So they say, oh, great, another video game. And then their kids start playing, and they become addicted, and it's too late.
Lawyer Alessandra Esposito Chartrand's firm is trying to launch a class action lawsuit against Epic.
Is that an attorney's names, or that's one person? Is it like a list of attorneys?
I think it was a law firm.
She argues psychologists specifically helped create Fortnite to get kids hooked. But she says Epic should have warned users it's highly addictive.
In Quebec, with the Consumer Protection Act, there's a duty to inform of the danger of your product that you market. And they didn't do that.
From the darkest depths of deep space.
She's representing the families of two children, 10 and 15, whose lives are unraveling because of Fortnite.
They fight with their parents. It becomes unbearable at home. They won't go for dinner. Sometimes they won't shower. They won't, you know, like they you become, it's actual addiction. And it takes over their lives.
Okay. Cut. We're going to need 30 more seconds.
Yeah.
The one kid is 6. The other kid is 10. The one kid's done like 1,800 games. The other one has done, and the one kid who's 10 or something, or 10 or 11, has stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning. I guess, again, he must be being, is it wolves or wolverines? Who's raising this kid? The parent can't go in and turn the thing off. Does the kid have his own house with his own electricity, with his own computer? Oh, no. The parent will walk in and say, hey, Jimmy, or whatever the French kid, Quebec kid's name is, right? Hey, Jose, here's the deal. You're not playing the game. Ah, screamy, yelly, and you take it away from them. But really, where's the parenting, Tom?
Okay, so I guess, I don't know why I feel like I'm in defense of these stories.
Right, because they're French. Because they're French.
Because I have to counter your idiocy, I guess. So, what's going on here,
thanks for making that
John,
noise before I had to. You throw the umpire in your own face. All right, moving on. Go ahead.
So, the idea here is that would you feel the same way about cigarettes?
Yeah.
Okay, so fine. Then you would never have brought suit against the tobacco companies, even though tobacco companies have now been sued for gazillions of dollars. So the idea is, yeah, well, my kid's never going to smoke, so it's not my problem.
No.
It's on you to do that. If you're making a product that unsuspecting kids could end up being addicted to, is there a line of attack legally that you can make?
Yeah.
One of the things, when you play Fortnite, you have to sign a class action waiver, but in Quebec, class action waivers have no legal standing.
Yes.
Now, when I first heard this, I thought this is ridiculous, because if 99% of the people that play Fortnite get joy out of it and 1% get addicted, is the purpose of Fortnite to get you addicted? No. I don't think so. Although one could make the argument with tobacco too, if a lot of people get, you know, enjoyment out of it just because it's killing you in the long run, that's your own choice.
But you know, the reason they got sued is because they intentionally knew and they held back that information. They knew that, and they buried all that for the longest time, all the carcinogens, all the toxins, all the poisons in the air. They knew what they were doing, and they still continue to pump them out there. So.
But as we say with all these tech giants, too, they've hooked us into, they put little counters, you know, saying, hey, and your show starts in 25 seconds.
I understand that.
These are all designed to keep us addicted, loosely.
And McDonald's adds sugar to French fries because it has a chemical effect upon how the brain responds to French fries. Everything is about getting you to come back. Like, watch this. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I'm not coming.
All right. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com and you can text as well at 98973. Come on in, everybody. Do love to hear from you. That is 98973, the text line or online. Well, no, they haven't come back yet. Online Training Academy hasn't come back. Ka-ching, ka-ching, freebie for them. Okay. Or you can get to us at mynorthwest.com. All right. What happened after the joke? This is the story. Do we have time for this? Yes, no, maybe so.
We can play the new stuff, probably not his old stuff.
Okay. There's a lot of comedians have recently been saying, hey, this problem is you get too many woke people in the audience that are too easily insulted, and we're not going to do comedy, or it's too hard to do comedy. Even the director of Joker said, listen, the reason I moved away from it is because everybody's just way too sensitive. One comedian in particular has sort of seen that, you know what, I can still work in this atmosphere because I just address people's sensitivity, and it still ends up being funny. What's the guy's name, Tom?
Gary Gulman.
Yes.
Well, I have to admit, I'd never heard of him. Apparently, he's a comedian's comedian, so people in the business know him, but I personally am unaware of him.
I have no idea how this is going to go. I mean, is it possible that this subject isn't even funny?
It was a long time since I shot my last special. I got very sick with the depression. I grew up in the 70s, and the only antidepressants we had access to was Snap Out of It. And What Have You Got to Be Depressed About? That was the second leading brand of antidepressant.
A happier kid you couldn't find. Always had a smile on his face. So how could I detect anything?
This is a book I wrote in second grade. It was called The Lonely Tree. And to anybody with a small amount of psychology knowledge, you would know this was a cry for help.
But I
know my depression is in remission.
And I'm only comfortable talking about it now because I have come out the other side.
New York Times did a whole feature on this guy. He is the comedian's comedian. Very, very clever, very funny stuff. And he shares with the audience things that most people don't normally laugh about.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a really nice profile. Apparently, he was, you know, as you were saying, he seems to embrace the PC culture and seems to, you know, have fun with that. And they say that's sort of what sets him apart from other people, is that he's not going the kind of the hackneyed route where you criticize others for being too sensitive. And yet, he is what he says. He's leading into this territory that's been rich for comics in the past, their own depression. But even in this case, they say he's actually dealing it with a kind of a humane approach to it.
Yeah.
At the end, you don't know how funny it is, but people love it anyway.
Yeah.
Or maybe because of that.
This is the thing that made him famous. He plays in the last 35 seconds.
Thanks very much. I just wanted to recommend a documentary to everyone, and then I'm going to go. It's about the men and one woman who abbreviated all 50 states down to two letters. All you have to know for this is that we have 50 states in America, and they each have a two capital letter abbreviation. But that wasn't always the case. Up until, I want to say 1973, and so I will. Up until 1973, every state had its own length of abbreviation, and it was chaos. But then the post office said, no, every state has to have a two capital letter abbreviation. And so they convened a crack squad of abbreviators, and they were charged with abbreviating all 50 states down to two letters. Now, I read this.
You hunt for the punchline. Go to our website.
We missed the post.
I got 11 more seconds. It's going to be funny.